Welcome back, everyone. I am Cass PNC. I'm joined, as usual, by my partner in crime, Mr. Bennett Tomlin. How are you today?
I'm doing well. How are you, Cass?
I'm doing good. We're joined by a guest who's previously been on the show, one of our favorites, Ed Zitron. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Enjoying the Other Side metaverse. I was so annoyed. I thought I'd be able to buy another deed to go in, but I don't think my accountant would speak to me again if I bought a bored ape. Also, I don't want to buy a bored ape.
I remember Zeke Fox bought a bored ape in his book and went to one of the parties and had a extraordinary time. Everyone should have a bored ape.
Well, 10,000 people should have a bored ape, and those are the only people on this planet who matter.
Right, everyone should have one, but you will buy a bored ape at the price you deserve.
As an avowed leftist, I believe the government should provide everyone with a bored ape.
A bored ape in every wallet? We're not here to talk about bored apes, unfortunately. I mean, I wish I could spend...
Just had to get in our cheap shots.
I could just spend hours and hours talking about bored apes and Yuga Labs, but we're here to talk about something. God, something. I call them something. I don't know.
That's something, all right.
Yeah. We're here to talk about a couple individuals who, surprisingly, Bennett and I have really spent almost no time talking about over the many years that we've been doing this podcast. The Winklevoss twins, Cameron and Tyler Winklevoss. These lads who I assume most people are pretty familiar with them. If you're not, I'll just quickly run through their brief history here. Is that they went to Harvard, met Mark Zuckerberg, helped fund Facebook, sued Mark Zuckerberg, won in the lawsuit against Mark Zuckerberg, made most of their money from that lawsuit, founded a cryptocurrency exchange called Gemini after buying a lot of Bitcoin, and have subsequently had a lot of problems. But I want Ed to dive into that more than I just did. I think I just gave a real basic summary. Ed, can you talk about more of the problems, the recent issues for the Winklevoss twins?
So the Tinkle brothers. So important detail is they got offered, I think they agreed to like a $40 million settlement with Mark Zuckerberg, which they then appealed. And the court just went, for God's sake, just take the money. We don't want to talk about it. It was like years of back and forth litigation. And I think the appellate court just was like, I can't do anymore. I can't hear you two or him or any of these people talk about, take the money and leave. What they did after that was kind of depressing because it actually made them a lot of money. They bought about 90,000 Bitcoin, which is now worth billions of dollars, of course. And they made a killing off of that. And what's interesting is when you dig into the press around it, how little journalism actually happened. There was one New York Times story and they were just like, they're making a venture capital fund or maybe an ETF. This is like 2050. Like, it was a remarkably long time ago. They went and they looked. There was a New York Times article. It's like, they're making an ETF. We'll take them out of their word. And they just never checked in again. So that never happened. And they founded what is now known as Gemini.
I just wanted to interject on something that also happened kind of shortly after they started Gemini and when they were still working on getting that ETF approved. Is also the first time they ran afoul of the law, which is when Gemini had their earlier settlement with the CFTC over market manipulation. Because two executives of Gemini who owned a massive amount of Bitcoin who were never named in the suit. So we'll just have to guess which two executives of Gemini had enough Bitcoin to do this, were manipulating the volume of certain markets that they intended to be used as part of this eventual ETF product. So they settled with the CFTC for that back in like 2017, 2018. It was years ago. But yeah, shortly after they founded Gemini and pitched it as the most regulated cryptocurrency exchange, they ended up having to settle with the CFTC for breaking the laws.
Which is not good. But nevertheless, they were allowed to keep doing stuff with money, which proves that the government is working perfectly. So they found Gemini, and then around 2020, towards the end of the pandemic, these guys are like, well, we already have billions of dollars and we're already unfathomably rich. What if we were more rich? So they founded something called Gemini Earn. Gemini Earn, an interest-bearing account. Now, you may think that that language sounds a lot like a bank account, and you'd be right. These accounts, they said, were treated much like a regular bank account. They were risk-adjusted. They put them through a risk management framework, and they mentioned multiple institutional partners, plural. That is a very important detail, plural. So some stuff happened and people put billions of dollars flowed into Gemini Earn, which was giving anywhere between like a 5 to 8 to 10% at one point interest return per annum on your crypto. Not a huge amount, definitely smaller than a lot of the dodgy ones. So you're like, oh, okay. I mean, a little bit lower than trustworthy ones like BlockFi, who was very trustworthy and nothing happened with them. Then some stuff happened in 2022. 2022 happened. There was the whole thing with Terra Luna. Everything fell down there. And the Winklevosses were very quiet at that time. Nothing really going on. And then something happened with Sam Bankman-Fried. And then around November 2022, a company called Genesis started to fall apart. And have you guys done anything on Genesis?
We talked about it a little bit during that November meltdown, just because it was one of several firms which were just all collapsing at that point because they had exposure to massively fraudulent enterprises.
Well, here's a fun story. So they're owned by a company called Digital Currency Group, and I'm going to truncate this story because it's quite multi-layered, as you both know. Digital Currency Group owns a number of companies, Grayscale Bitcoin Trust, which is a whole nother pain in the ass. They own Genesis, which is a institutional lender. People lend them their money. They lend money to other people, supposedly trustworthy. And then, of course, CoinDesk, which is the publication that destroyed the crypto industry by covering it. God bless them. Ian Allison, the GOAT. Nick Baker as well. Nick Dett. Great. I actually like CoinDesk. Great deal. Then the Winklevi put out an announcement saying that due to some issues with their institutional partners, they were pausing access to Gemini Earn. They could no longer withdraw your money. Over the course of the next few months, it revealed that they had not got institutional partners, plural. They had one. And that partner was Genesis. Now, where did Genesis keep their money? Where did they lend the most money to? Well, the answer is two great places. Number one, Three Arrows Capital. And number two, FTX. So all of the money that Gemini had claimed was going into institutional partners who would, they would then get preferential interest rates on to loan out this money. Cool, great. It's going to them. No, it all went to Genesis. It went to one place, one goddamn place that then immediately spunked it into the worst hedge fund ever, which then put it into FTX, which then put it into Terra Luna and everything collapsed there. I'm not going over the Terra Luna thing. Nevertheless, over the next few months, there was the world's most pathetic slap fight between Barry Silbert, who owns Digital Currency Group, which owns Genesis, and he's a crook as well, and the Winklevosses. And the Winklevosses would post these like tiny fonted letters in images on Twitter that were just like impossible to read. But they'd be like, yeah, single mothers have put their kids' college funds in here, and kids have put their bar mitzvah money in here. And it was just really dramatic. And then skipping ahead a bit, New York Attorney General did a lawsuit against the Winklevosses and against Barry Silbert, DCG and Genesis and all this, and revealed a little detail, which is since 2021, Gemini knew how risky Genesis was. They were like, oh yeah, they're under collateralized. In 2022, a member of Gemini's board said that compared them to Lehman Brothers. And in October 2022, the Winklevosses had a meeting with Barry Silbert, and Barry Silbert went, oh yeah, you can't withdraw the money. And they're like, why? And he goes, oh, it will bankrupt the entirety of Genesis. And they're like, oh, okay. Now, to be clear, they actually gave notice to Genesis saying, Gemini Earn is paused. We're not going to do this anymore. It took them until October 2022 to actually shut it down. Now, you would think when they paused this program, they would stop sending money to Genesis. That is not the case. They sent at least $11 million more dollars of customer funds while they were like, yeah, this company is just burning this cash. Oh boy, well, I wouldn't touch them, but we will keep sending you money for now. And then to add a little bit of insult to injury, part of the collateral they got, say, in case Genesis lost all their money, was actually in the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust. They had a certain amount of shares that they took as collateral. Gemini then sold all of these shares the second that they got them out of escrow because the agreement was defaulted on. And then in bankruptcy court, the Genesis estate, and just to be clear, a bankruptcy court does not give a fuck about anyone. They're just like, we need the most money for the most senior creditors, who, by the way, would be institutional partners way before Gemini Earn customers. And they went, yeah, because you guys sold all that stock. We don't actually owe you any of that money. And also, you flaunted very basic bankruptcy law, so you just lost your customers $500 million. It was a whole slap fight. But then the Winklevosses announced an announcement with the NYD New York Department of Financial Services saying, we agreed to give $1.1 billion back to customers. It's a good thing. It's actually really good news. Few problems with it. Few problems as I see it. They've agreed, but the bankruptcy courts for Genesis actually need to agree to this deal. Also, it's unclear where these funds are coming from. Because Genesis doesn't have $1.1 billion. Are the Winklevosses going to give up that money? Where is the cash coming? It's not coming from the estate. The estate does not have the money. But throughout this whole time, the big topper on this is the Winklevosses publicly and repeatedly lied. They misled their customers in this insane level, in this craven way. The NYAG's lawsuit, and I really encourage anyone listening to this to actually go and read it, is just time after time of just people internally at Gemini being like, yeah, Genesis is terrible. We should not be putting money. This is insanely risky. And then maybe 6 months before everything fell down, one of the Winklevosses go, yeah, can someone give me a one pager on whether Genesis is good or bad? And they're like, we've been telling you, man, this is a bad idea.
I just want to mention here, you're talking about this in such a way that it just really harkens back to an episode that Bennett and I did. Bennett and I didn't ever do an episode that, for instance, explicitly talked about Genesis or DCG. But there's an episode featuring a gentleman that we spoke with once named Mario Gibney. And he was working with a Bitcoin lending company at the time. And one of the questions I asked him during that interview was, where does the yield come from?
Well, the secret is crime.
Well, he goes, well, so we lend it out to trusted institutional third parties who they capture that yield and pass it on to us. And then we pass it on to our customers. And I go, oh, okay, trusted institutions. So where do they get the yield? And he was like, well, I mean, I don't work for them. I don't know. And so the answer for where does the yield come from that you're passing on to customers was, I don't know. And Genesis does it. And it was like, okay, Genesis says they do it, but how do they do it? Well, I don't know. Well, then, so they're just saying they do it and everyone just trusts them because they're institutional investors. Like, sorry, that this is the shit that I've heard for so long with so many of these things. It's something Bennett and I discuss regularly where people go, oh, it's arbitrage. And you're supposed to just take that as an actual answer, like it means anything?
I mean, the arbitrage one rocks. Doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense if you think about it for more than 2 seconds.
It just is. I mean, the arbitrage just is. It just exists and they take advantage of it. You're not an institutional investor. You wouldn't get it. And this is my thing where I reflect on my first question. I'm an idiot. And my first question was, where's the yield come from? And there was no answer. And I think to myself, these people who are the most sophisticated investors in cryptocurrency, some of them, you know, we've talked about the All In podcast before. Some of these people are the most sophisticated investors supposedly in the world. And they're not asking that fucking question. I'm sorry, but like, what in the fuck is happening? Like, I it's willful ignorance, right? Like, it has to be willful ignorance.
It is willful. I don't think that anyone, when they really thought about it. So in my early crypto days, when I was just investigating and fucking around with this stuff, you'd go on things and it'd be like, where's this coming from? They'd be like, oh, we just create it. But it's like, they'd be like, oh yeah, it's just generated from the contract and hopefully the price stays up. Like that, I kind of respect as a degree of just like, yeah, it's a scam. Just sorry. I think the thing, especially you can see this in the All In podcast, well, there's the mistake. These aren't sophisticated investors. These are investors that have done well. Jason Calacanis doesn't know shit about fuck about where the money comes from. And the answer is other customers. The yield is getting other people into the system. Could call it a scheme, I suppose.
There is a word, I think, for that type of scheme.
But also with this, it's insane. This was like more than $1 billion of money. And they threw it into the fire. And it's not even like they threw it in and then were like, we trust Genesis. And they misled us. No, it's just the repeatedly, they're just like, this is probably really bad. I hope that this doesn't come back to bite us somehow. I hope it's okay. And it never was. It was always bad. From the very beginning, the NYAG suit says that they knew from the beginning that they could barely cover their balances.
And like, part of what makes it so frustrating for me, and what makes the Winklevi in general so frustrating for me, is their entire pitch since founding Gemini, since founding this exchange that practically no one uses, has been, it's okay that no one uses us because we're taking regulations seriously. We're taking our responsibilities seriously, and we want to be a serious place for serious people to trade serious assets. And meanwhile, they're acting like a bunch of fools, throwing billions of dollars around the industry to Zuzu and Sam Bankman-Fried. Right? Like, sure, they put an intermediary in before the money got to there. They made Barry Silbert chuck it around the industry instead of them specifically. But they have entirely marketed themselves using this, like, very thin facade that still at times gets, like, believed and repeated. Like, when people are talking about Gemini products, they still tend to act as though Gemini is a more serious exchange than its competitors. And that's always frustrated me.
I want to read you something here. So the resolution of this situation. First thing I'm going to do is read you here the statement from NYDFS. Gemini failed to conduct due diligence to an unregulated third party, later accused of massive fraud, harming earned customers who were suddenly unable to access their assets after Genesis Global Capital experienced a financial meltdown, said Superintendent Harris of the NYDFS. Today's settlement is a win for earned customers who have a right to the assets they entrusted to Gemini. And just to be clear, what Gemini said... This is how Gemini span this. They said, today we shared with EARN users that we have finally reached a settlement in principle with Genesis and other creditors in the Genesis bankruptcy that will, if approved by bankruptcy court, result in all EARN users receiving 100% of their assets back, which is true, by the way. And just to be clear, they then said, we worked tirelessly over the past 15 months to advocate for EARN users and seek the return of their assets. And as responsible stewards of the crypto ecosystem, we know that our customers value the ability to hold their digital assets through the ups and downs of crypto market cycles. And we recognize the hardship presented by this lengthy process, and we're deeply appreciative of our customers' patience. Motherfucker, you're not stewards of this industry. You are big and illegal criminals. In a just society, you would be in jail.
They are, no, they're stewards for that. That is stewards for the cryptocurrency industry, right?
They're respectable criminals. Stewards.
Isn't that exactly who's stewarding the cryptocurrency industry
what I like
in general?
Is that we're at the all-time high right now. All these guys are like, well, told you.
Zach from BlockFi, who recently got hired at some new real estate company, the former CEO of BlockFi, is now doing something else. And in his post announcing it, he's like, we had 100% recovery. No, you fucking didn't. You converted cryptocurrency liabilities to cash liabilities at a time. Cryptocurrency like tripled since then. And so now you have like 33% recovery that looks like 100.
Right. This is the same people who say FTX is getting 100% back. And it's like, sorry, that actually isn't how it works.
Weirdly
like,
enough, Gemini did, though, because Gemini is getting late for like...
if the 1.1 comes through.
If it comes through, and I think it's likely to, but we won't know for another week. And if it somehow doesn't, I just... These fucking guys.
I fully expect the money to come through as well, especially considering how many assets DCG had to sell off to make this like a thing that they could do, including CoinDesk, which I felt was really unfortunate. I continue to feel like it's really unfortunate and ultimately is sending CoinDesk in the wrong direction. I guess we'll see. But, you know, it was Peter Thiel and his friends buying up CoinDesk, which is like, it's hard to think that that's a good thing for cryptocurrency to have, not even arguably, what is the number one most trusted name in cryptocurrency news up until that moment, get purchased by Peter Thiel and his friends.
I don't know if that's worse than Barry Silbert, though.
I used to believe that as well, but I do actually think that just based on the people who I had spoken with back in the day at CoinDesk, that Barry Silbert pretty much kept his nose out of the journalism stuff. Whereas based on Peter Thiel's history, I guess I'll say, in case anyone is unfamiliar with it. I guess, yeah, I'd call him the number one fan of journalists and honesty. I am concerned with all of that stuff. I also think that it is interesting to me. We were actually all talking about Billy McFarland and Second Chances before we jumped on and started recording. But here we are. We're talking about the Winklevi. And it's kind of astounding, right? Like how many times they've lost and yet they're still here. You know what I mean? Like Mark Zuckerberg really created Facebook and made them look silly, but they still made a lot of money from that lawsuit. And then they bought Bitcoin, which is not like people will say it's actually holding Bitcoin for that long is a sign of your job. It's like, no, they bought a speculative asset at the right time.
They were able to not do anything. Yeah. They were able to just sit because they had enough money otherwise.
Exactly. And then they started an exchange that, as Bennett points out, nobody uses except for the Winklevi.
Like, isn't it meant to be legit, though? That's meant to be the legit one as well?
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's meant to be the legit one because they do KYC. They're one of the exchanges that does KYC and has a cash off ramp. But like, if no one's using it and there's no liquidity, like Bennett has pointed out, or like you're suggesting, like how legitimate is that? If you have none of the liquidity and you're trading none of the Bitcoin and none of the cryptocurrencies, really, is that legitimate? Is this where the legitimate money? Like, I don't understand that at all either.
So when you say nobody uses it, how do you judge that?
Volume, reported volume, share of total, like, spot Bitcoin volume. Yeah, they massively lag even like
191 million.
That's nothing, right? Like 191 million is nothing in a $1 trillion asset class, right? And if you look at Binance, it's probably hundreds of billions of dollars or something like that. Like,
it's like $25 billion, but also the thing with that is, can you really trust? Then again, this, I'm looking at CoinGecko here, and it's telling me that Gate.io and KuCoin are more trustworthy than Gemini. And I'm just beginning to wonder. They also claim Binance is 10 out of 10, and so is Bybit. That's the trust score. It's a rating algorithm developed by CoinGecko to evaluate the legitimacy of an exchange trading volume. That's so cool. I love that just even today, after everything that happened.
Well, they all have 10s out of 10s. They all have 10s out of 10s.
Oh, actually, Gemini does not. Gemini has a 9 out of 10.
Well, see, Gemini has actually had to settle for market manipulation before.
And these guys don't settle for market manipulation. It's a part of their life.
They strive for it.
Yeah, it's part of the product.
Most of the exchanges they list are like, I mean, I don't even know how. So like, if I scroll way down or something to, I don't know, Max Maycoin Exchange or Bullish for that matter, which is Peter Thiel owned. No one knows what these are. They move no money whatsoever. I think their daily volume, that's the monthly visits. Okay, their monthly visits are 100,000 people or something. How in the world is that getting a 7 out of 10? And if I see a 7 out of 10, I'm thinking, oh, well, like, that doesn't sound that bad. That sounds fine. But like,
that's a
no C. one
C's
uses...
To, C's kit degrees.
Yeah. Yeah. And
C's
yet,
get you hat.
Yeah, exactly. Meanwhile...
Com is 10 out of 10? Like,
yeah, 10. All these 10s. Binance, Bybit,
it's so
OKX.
Cool. This industry's so good, and now it's back up again. These people are like, yeah, this is the proof that this is legit, baby. Woo!
And many of these individuals argue that they don't need a strong regulatory state because they are going to be capable of forming self-regulatory bodies and appropriately making sure that they, like, establish a level of trust in the industry. You know, 10 out of 10 trust.
Correct on all counts.
Bennett, you're really going to love this. One of their fifth most trustworthy exchange, this is according to CoinGecko, is HTX, Justin Sun advised exchange that has been repeatedly hacked and had its own token go to like near zero because of the antics that Justin Sun has been doing.
Not to mention the probable insolvency.
Sure.
Have they run that guy down yet?
No. Soon, though, probably.
I never got to the end of my question. So the end of my question was, we've seen these guys be unlucky repeatedly, unlucky and lucky repeatedly, in terms of staying meaningfully solvent, I guess. And I look at it and I see the people left. And it's like, yeah, we've got Justin Sun. We've got the Winklevi twins. We've got Brian Armstrong. We've got like a handful of people, and none of them are trustworthy. None of them represent anything positive about this industry. But then are they like untouchable? And are they just going to like, do you see a bad end for the Winklevi at all? Or is this just like,
No. Did
they get the good? Yeah, they got the good ending.
None of these people will ever see heaven, but they will certainly not see any kind of prison cell or real repercussions. They ended up paying $40 million for what they did. However, to be clear, if they don't somehow get this deal through, NYDFS will shit down their throat. Like, they will. NYDFS is extremely aggressive when you don't work with them, and they will come down on them. But no, none of these people get in any trouble. Brian Armstrong doesn't get in trouble, despite the fact that every time crypto hits a certain amount of money, Coinbase even stops working. That's one of my favorite things. Justin Sun, what's happened with him? He's like an actual criminal. He's just fine. No one's got him yet. They got Do Kwon because Do Kwon, like, very obviously did crimes.
Even that is crazy to me, where it's like, Do Kwon is still in Montenegro and they're refusing to extradite him to the US now. And he's going to get extradited to South Korea instead, to the Republic of Korea instead. And like, okay, what does that mean for him?
Is he a South Korean national? Like, yeah. Like is there a reason he... Okay, so I actually don't know how notable he is in South Korea, but if he is in any way and he did big illegal financial crimes, they may actually just make an example out of him.
Yeah,
that's what I hope. I hope that happens. I hope these little creeps get it, but they won't. Like, this is the thing. This is why people are disenfranchised with the world. This is why I get cynical sometimes, because the Winklevosses knew from the beginning. And the NYIG suit, I hope, continues, but it'll probably get dismissed if they end up getting the money in there. And the Winklevosses, in a stable, real industry, Coinbase should have been, like, Brian Armstrong should have said, what you did was disgraceful. They should have acted against them. There should have been an industry-wide spitting at the Winklevosses, what they did. What they have done is worse than what Mark Zuckerberg did with Cambridge Analytica. Maybe a little more widespread, but at least on the level. Barry Silbert, same fucking deal. He is the amount of shit that DCG and Genesis did. They just burned money. They loaned money from themselves to themselves. They gave a $1.1 billion promissory note. Yeah. From DCG to Genesis to cover up the budget shortfall, but they never sent any money.
Right.
They just used it as a way to lie on their balance statements. These people are crooks, and the crypto industry, there's nothing. And this is kind of standard for the tech industry. Tech industry doesn't call out people. Ryan Breslow from Bolt basically defrauded all of his investors. He lied about what Bolt could do. He lied about customers. No, he just got a negative Forbes article talking about how big a liar he is, which linked to the glossy Forbes story about his made-up wellness company. We are going to repeat these things until worse happens, and it will keep getting worse. People will take the piss more.
Well, as you point, you're like, oh, well, why isn't Brian Armstrong, or why aren't these other exchange owners and operators coming out against this horrible thing that they saw happen? And I just go, well, people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones, right? Like, that's why they're not doing it. And it goes back to simple things like what you just mentioned, where it's like Coinbase went down twice in 1 week. I can tell you, if my brokerage account showed a zero in it, even just one time ever, I would immediately be looking for a new brokerage to put my money in, because I'd be like, why did my brokerage number say zero on it? That's mental. And like, this happened twice in 1 week at Coinbase? How? How did that happen? Not only did the brokerage go down and you couldn't trade, which is crazy, but your brokerage account said zero? I mean, these are fatal flaws for most businesses that are in finance. And yet Coinbase chugs along, you know, no fine for that. No issues. No, like, no regulators coming after them for something that I think is like, I mean, that's terrifying. You could give someone an actual heart attack over that, right?
Killed himself. A guy killed himself because of his Robinhood account, because of the options he used, believing that he owed Robinhood like
$350,000. Yeah. I remember that. Yeah. But this is exactly what I'm talking about, where, like, of course, Brian Armstrong isn't going to say anything. He doesn't want to. We saw what happened. We actually got a really good idea of what happens when an exchange owner talks shit about another exchange owner in cryptocurrency. Because Sam Bankman-Fried is in jail now, and Changpeng Zhao
was what. It's very clear what brought him down was just him being a nasty little bitch.
Yeah,
they were like arguing little madams, being like, "You can't say that to me in Telegram. I'm gonna get you arrested. I'm gonna burn down the whole crypto. Watch me now."
And then they did.
I also think there is a simpler and more annoying answer, which is, Brian Armstrong doesn't fucking care. He doesn't care. He doesn't care that they did that. Even if Coinbase is on the up and up, he doesn't give a shit if Gemini isn't. It doesn't benefit him to make Gemini look bad. He's not going to make any less money because of that. All it's going to do is send shocks through the industry, which would hurt him in some way, despite him having sold enough Coinbase stock that he's now filthy rich, so he can do nothing all day. Miserable shithead, Michael Stipe looking ass, fucking
You mentioned how there's kind of this broad disenchantment with the regulatory and law enforcement system and the way it engages with this type of problem, because it doesn't engage, and the extent to which it will engage is a wrist slap and move on, right? And like, the other thing I think we need to remember is Coinbase has been engaged in several important lawsuits with regulators for quite some time now. So they're also in a position where they don't want to attract any additional attention. And that's true for basically every exchange is under some kind of investigation or has been. Try to send out like a Freedom of Information Act request to any regulator about any cryptocurrency exchange, and you'll immediately get back the law enforcement exemption on it because they're all under some kind of investigation. And so none of them will say shit despite their stated gestures towards self-regulation, because all of them have or are accused or are being investigated for various untoward things they have done. It's a really great industry. Things work smoothly. Nothing better.
But also, where is the media right now? Where is the media?
Lead off.
Where are you? What? Oh, Bitcoin. How much is Bitcoin? $72,000, maybe? I don't know, but it's Bitcoin time. I will say, Kevin Roos. I kind of have respect for Kevin Roos. So Chris Dixon, big old bitch of Andreessen Horowitz, that's his title. did not respond to my request to come on Better Offline, my podcast. Cowardly act. They scared of me. Scared of Molly White. He should be. nevertheless, he went on the New York Times Hard Fork podcast, and to Kevin Roos's defense, he actually sat there and just roasted him. And Casey Newton, you bloody coward. Kevin was cooking Chris Dixon. He was cooking. He was roasting him. He was actually getting somewhere. For the first time, someone got one of these creeps in a room, which is like, no, that's not what you said. Actually, what you said was this. And Casey Newton was like, well, we got to move on. I need to find out what Mark Zuckerberg wants me to, I mean, what Mark Zuckerberg said. I don't think that people realize how disenfranchising this is for regular people, because people are not stupid. And I think that that's what's really getting me with this, is I think sometimes the media either has no memory or thinks people are dumb, because the crypto people think people are dumb. They've proven that time and time again. They just lie. They lie again. Nothing happens to them, so they lie more. The media, however, has a chance here to say, hey, this time back the fuck up. This is not the time to trade. Even if Bitcoin is at 69 grand or what have you, don't invest right now. Or even, they don't even need to say, don't invest. Just say, be very careful. These are the forces at play. The same guy who said 2017 was market manipulation said that 2021 was market manipulation. I don't know. Every crypto article needs to have disclaimers now. There aren't. Not a bloody one to be seen. It's like, oh, it's a volatile asset. Well, the ETFs are here, so now it's legitimate. It's just, it's disgraceful. And also, they built nothing. Nothing's happened. Where is the stuff? Where are the things? Where are the decentralized carpet stores? Like, where Dookie is Dash. The fucking... Dookie Dash is an iOS game now. Dookie Dash, look at the other side metaverse. I'm sorry, I used to review massively multiplayer online RPGs. I have seen so many of these games. I was doing that in 2007, I think. And this game looks like those. It looks worse than, I'm thinking of like a 2007 one called like Tabula Rasa. Tabula Rasa looked better than this. This is a game released in 2007, 2008, and Dookie Dash and other side, they're released in 2023, 2024. Where are the regulators? Where's the anyone? Like, it's just so weird. And I get that the government moves slowly, but can they not see what's being done here? Can they not see who's getting rich?
I do think that we've almost hit this point of no return. So the reason that I bring that up, though, right, is that I think all of these tokens, these chains, these NFTs, right, even NFTs, if we use the example of there was that, what was it called, Stoner Cats or whatever, like Mila Kunis and a team of other idiots made their NFT thing, but they got sued and they had to get rid of it, right? But like, okay, so you got the famous rich people and they paid their fine and they got rid of the NFT. Okay, so now do like the 30,000 other NFTs. Like, what are you going to do? What are you going to go after all of those people? Like, you're not. We know you're not going to do that. And at what point does it become... This is something Bennett and I have also discussed, where it's like, when it's clear that the regulator has caught the top guy, they need to stop being like, okay, well, we're going to give you a slap on the wrist and then we'll work with you to get these other smaller individuals. It's like, well, no, you got the top guy. What are you doing? Why are you trying to make this some like weird honeypot for normal retail investors? That's super strange. Why don't you just get the big guy?
Or how about when two giant riverboat boys at the very least risked $1 billion, proved complete recklessness, absolute lack of regard for due diligence, for risk management. How about you say, you can't do this job anymore. We, as the New York Department of Financial Services, do not allow you to touch money like this ever again. You must divest yourselves from Gemini, a company that we have as the NYDFS. We have said that you have done things to hurt the company because they stated that what they did affected the material health of Gemini. At this point, boot them out.
Here's two counters to this, in that Bennett, feel free to push back on this kind of imagined reality. But I think the three most trusted American cryptocurrency exchanges in terms of like considered trustworthy would be Gemini, Coinbase, and Kraken. And if we look at these three exchanges, Coinbase, here's a fact that not everyone knows, but Coinbase actually custodied a lot of their customer exchange, their customers' funds and their own funds on Bitfinex when Bitfinex got hacked. And so the only reason that they didn't get a haircut, so Bitfinex gave every customer a 33% haircut or something like that, 30.6% haircut. Well, except for one customer. And that customer was Coinbase, because Coinbase...
Well, except for at least one customer.
Correct, sorry. Except for at least one customer. And that customer was Coinbase, because Coinbase threatened to sue Bitfinex if they gave them a haircut, right? So now you're talking about this weird... Like, why were you keeping customer funds on Bitfinex at all? That's crazy. You shouldn't be doing that. But then let's go to, for instance, Kraken, where Jesse Powell, who is the CEO of Kraken, has openly discussed on Twitter, X, whatever you want to call it, he's openly discussed how he would utilize PayPal accounts and like other like third-party payment processors to run Kraken back in the day. Like, that's totally illegal. There's no way that's a legal thing that you're doing. That is unacceptable. He did it anyway. And so not only do I think you're right in that none of these people care, Ed, like yeah. Brian and Jesse and the Winklevi, they don't care. That this is not something that they do care about. But if they did care, or if they did want to say something about the other exchanges, they're already compromised. They've already openly shown that they are fallible to an extreme, and that they've done some very illegal things. So I like none of them could say something about each other, even if they wanted to. And like, that's where we're at. And I don't know, like, I don't think any of these exchanges are going away either, to be quite honest with you, you know?
Yeah, but I think it comes back to a basic thing of NYDFS can ban people from the financial services industry. They have that power, and they have the justification here that If the reason you ban people from a financial system is because they are dangerous to the system, these guys have been dangerous to the system. They've proven themselves bad with customer money. They're dangerous to New York businesses.
I like DNO bans. I think DNO bans are a good idea for more of these regulation things, and would at least make people feel like something happened after
them. But also, it would give them a temporary ban.
Yeah, give them 5 years, 10 years.
Yeah, but even a year, bench them. Make it clear that the result of doing this isn't financial, because right now $40 million to the Winklevoss is what they have in the couch cushion. They don't give a shit that they, and also, by the way, the Winklevosses didn't pay that. Gemini did.
That's like, that was like their prep school tuition back in the day.
That's how much they spend on beautiful handmade boats every week.
That was their ivory tower tuition.
Which is that an actual real tower that they had built of ivory. It's just frustrating because there are mechanisms to fix this. There are things to do. But also, the NYDFS negotiate with them where they were like, well, we won't quit. We won't get the money. But fuck you. No, they can stop you. They can stop you.
It's crazy. And it's crazy how far this goes. Like, this is not a new problem, right? Like, I instantly, as you mentioned this, I think of Milken. I think of Michael Milken, who, in case anyone is unfamiliar, I'm just going to call him a scam artist, but he's a fucking very, very rich scam artist. And he did go to prison for his financial crimes, but it was for like a year or something. And then he came out and he could just go back into the financial sector. Like,
and he has not shut up since then, claiming he wasn't actually guilty when he pled guilty.
I know, but that, and so that's what I'm saying is like, instead of like, clearly prison actually wasn't enough, right? It, what would have been enough is saying, your whole business model was ripping people off. You're banned from finance forever.
Now, and we should say, I think he was partially banned. I think he did have a DNO for like a 4-year from certain types of business. And so now, so he ended up coming back in as like a consultant where he was telling other people how to do what he used to did. He just wasn't doing it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And now he runs the Milken Institute and he does all these other, and which are like pretty influential. You know what I mean? Like these are influential think tanks and like businesses that he's in charge of. And that's crazy. And the system has been broken. That it's just like shows it's not new. It is. It's not even 20 or 30 years old. It's probably been broken for 50 or 60 or 70. Like this is not a new thing that these guys. Everyone talks about them not getting prison sentences, but it's like exactly what you guys are talking about. It shouldn't just be that. Like they all of them should have
stopping them being able to do stuff works.
Exactly.
And I don't know. They're like, oh, it'll stop innovation in the space. Fuck you. What innovation? What has happened in crypto? I mean, in general.
Gemini dollar. Everyone remembers Gemini dollar, right?
Is that still a thing?
I don't remember Gemini dollar. Is that their stable coin?
Well, yeah, they.
Yes, it was their stable coin that they were paying people to use, which
that's good.
Meant it got like one firm took advantage of that and like took a bunch of their money and then ditched all the stable coin and then all the stable coin got redeemed and they were
wasn't
like,
it 3AC
oh no,
that
we've
did that?
Been fooled.
I feel like it was 3AC that did that.
It always feels like this is the same story. And this stuff
I think
is
it was
happening
3AC in combination with Celsius who was doing that loop.
But at some point you have to wonder, what's it going to take to make regulators do anything? Do we need a bigger, nastier FTX? Is that what's going
to
happen?
Cass and I have talked about this before. Like the regulatory state is gutted. Like you go back to the foundation of the SEC, right? And think about how bad things needed to get for the PCORA investigation to even start and for this kind of thing to even have a chance of happening. And then you look at like the SEC's structure and we're most often looking at them through the eyes of crypto because that's nominally what this podcast is about. but like if you look at the SEC more, like their ability to use their administrative courts is being actively diminished through some specifically targeted appeals. Some of their ongoing rulemaking in regards to like their climate disclosures and other changes in disclosures are being tied up in Congress. Structurally, the SEC is having these difficulties while their funding has been flat or down. And while these cryptocurrency exchanges and these cryptocurrency businesses, many of them, though this does not apply to Gemini, take more and more steps to try to make themselves resistant to the reach of the SEC, to make it as inconvenient as possible for the SEC to go after them. Which is not to say the SEC cannot go after international firms, just that it's going to require a larger investment from the SEC. And so like you have these combination of these structural issues that make the SEC worse, which makes people's perception of the SEC worse, which means the SEC gets less support, less political will to go after their projects. And you end up in like this negative feedback cycle, which eventually leads to an $18 million fine for EOS, a whatever million fine for et cetera, down and down the line. So you say, are we going to need something bigger than FTX? I kind of think we will. And I kind of think it'll need to be a U.S. domiciled firm where they'll be able to do it relatively cleanly. Otherwise, they're going to keep going for settlements and deferred prosecution agreements and things like that that they can reliably get, they can get the payment, and they can at the end of the year say, we closed this number of cases and got this amount of dollars, and that's big.
Very depressing. I don't know what else to say. And I think I don't think the Coinbase is the one that does it. I think they are as legit as one of these companies can be. I think they may just fall apart due to classic bad business problems.
Not earning enough money.
Not making more money than they spend on the insane. How is a casino that expensive to run? I don't know. But Brian Armstrong got his. So
they
got to
invest in like their NFT casino they launch and then forget about and invest
in. Yeah, like three people used it. But it's just insane. Like,
which, okay, this is, again, not the point of this episode, but how did Coinbase, like, perhaps the best positioned company in America to launch an NFT marketplace? Like, they have a captive audience. They have all these people with funds ready to deploy. How could they not trade JPEGs well?
Because, I mean, the market manipulator machine didn't work so good. Like, no one actually buys NFTs.
Yeah, no,
like,
no one could trade that well, it turns out.
None of this is real. And I think, so if I had to sit here, gun to my head, which, I mean, very easy to think about when you talk about this stuff, is I think the thing that could actually really damage this is in the event that there is another massive, very quick crash and a lot of these ETFs get washed down. I think if real institutional money gets burned here, I think that there are going to be some consequences.
You just mean if they close, like if the ETFs close down? Is that what you're
saying? No, if the ETFs, just the people investing in the ETFs lose a shit ton of money.
Oh, I see. If the asset goes down quickly.
Yeah, but very suddenly. If they get burned by the volatility, that probably won't be enough. If FX trading has existed for years and has burned people multiple times, then it's probably going to have to be another FTX. It's probably just going to have to be something bigger, nastier, worse.
I'll say this. I still think that as much as I have a lot of issues, especially like pig butchering now and mm-hmm. these other kind of scams that are going on in cryptocurrency mainly, I think that's mainly where they're happening. Of course, these are happening outside of cryptocurrency as well. But I think that's, we have some hard evidence that the numbers in the report are a little seemingly exaggerated in my humble opinion. But still, there's some crazy numbers that are certainly happening, getting scam wise in the industry. However, I will say that to this day, like, I think the wake up call for regulators won't be in FTX. You know what I mean? Like, it's not going to be some crypto exchange that wakes regulators up to the needed changes in finance as a whole. It's going to be a bank failing. It's going to be one of the biggest, like, if Tesla goes to zero, maybe regulators will start going, oh, we need to really ask some questions. That's seemingly
that
the most
valuable.
It will, in that if these larger financial institutions get rung in and have to, like, clean up the way that they behave, I think it will alter the way that they interact with the cryptocurrency industry, and that will have a hindering effect on the ability for people to just put money in however they want and send it to wherever they want. And that could be a good thing, actually, to, like, have these institutions pay a little bit more attention to it. I think that regulators have been gutted, like Bennett said, and banks, for instance, community banks or whatever, just kind of behave however they feel like it, and regulators catch up to them later on. And yeah, like, you need a disaster for regulators to realize that is not an acceptable way to operate.
There needs to be a bigger disaster then with crypto, because I just don't think that stocks changing is going to affect crypto, just because these people barely talk to each other. The people who handle the stock part, like, I don't see that. I know what you're getting at, and I think that, I'm not saying what you're saying is impossible. I just think a bigger, more illegal, more stupid thing happened. Maybe it is Coinbase. Maybe it is one of these companies. Maybe if Coinbase ended up being dodgy, and I'm not saying it is, but I'm also saying it acts in a way that certainly suggests that all the time. Like, the fact it goes down every time there's too much traffic is really something. I just think that there's a decent chance that the only thing that will change anything is something bigger and worse. The fact that the Gemini Earn thing was not bigger news is an indictment of the media, full fucking stop. I'm disgusted that more places were not like, this is the amount of my... When I wrote that piece, end of last year, I was highlighting this. People are like, wow, I haven't heard about this. It's like, why am I the guy? I have a day job. I'm doing stuff in the day. I have other things to work. I can't be the guy that tells people this. I love my podcast, whatever. But why am I the person? Why are not the crypto people? Why are the crypto people doing this? And it's just weird. It's weird reading the crypto pubs sometimes. It's weird that these people incredulously say, yeah, hell yeah. Yeah, this is definitely for real. We're building software, right? When? What software? How's it work? When does it work? When will the software do something?
They build casinos that go down when there's too much volume. So that's something, right?
But also, at this point, the other thing is, what the SEC might be trying to do is just get Ethereum classed as a security. That might actually be how they get rid of everything. And that has been hinted about in some of the ETH ETFs.
I doubt
it. I respect those guys for like trying to push that through. Like, yeah, we'll do an ETF if you do ETH as a security. Gives a shit.
Grayscale,
who gives a fuck? Yeah.
Grayscale has like opened up about 10 different trusts now. For ETH, for Solana, for a bunch of these different cryptocurrencies. And I suspect it's exactly what you're saying, where the end goal for every single one of those trusts is to become an ETF.
But if any of those get marked as a security, Coinbase is dead. How the hell can Coinbase operate going forward if any of those things get put as a security? Their business model is dead. They will not be able to do it.
Sure. I think it is very unlikely that Ether gets named a security. Hinman's comments were unofficial, but they still put the SEC in an awkward position. And like the filings for like the ETH ETFs largely center around kind of similar arguments to the Bitcoin ETFs, which is that there already exist these large markets overseen by the CFTC via like the CME trading of these assets and things like that. And so I think that Ether is not a case the SEC wants to make, because it would be the case they would have to make. Hmm. And every single crypto dollar would be against it. And crypto commissioners have previously kind of hinted that they weren't going to do that, what, back in 2018 or whatever. So 6 years later, it makes it politically harder to go after something like that. And so if you can't go after Ether, they can continue to go after Coinbase as they are picking individual assets they've listed and things like that. But Coinbase can at least maintain, likely, I think, Bitcoin and Ether trading.
But just if they, what, if they lose ERC-20 though, if like AMP or any of those gets marked as security, what happens then? They don't have the shitcoin pipeline.
Well, that one asset class they'll take down. It doesn't mean that they'll take
them all
down.
Yeah, but no, but they will get scared of others. If one gets knocked, surely the rest will.
Yeah, well, and there's objections to Coinbase's business model as it is, doing all the shitcoin peddling they are, right? They still struggle to consistently make more money than they spend.
Which is insane.
Coinbase as a business model is potentially at risk there, sure.
So every crypto exchange in America will be.
Sure. I also think it's really important, though, you know, for what it's worth, Binance US, for instance, is like already saying that they've failed as a company.
Yeah,
like, I think the president. Dead. Yeah, they're dead. Right. Like you don't need regulators to necessarily cause these businesses to have to shut down. And I also think it's worth saying that while certainly these exchanges have gone out of their way to walk this very fine gray line, right, between black market and normal market. But that regulatory arbitrage speaks to the poor job that regulators are doing as well, and have been doing for a significant amount of time. And you can look at a different industry. You can look at something like we've talked about Paul LaRue with our buddy Evan Ratliff on this podcast before. He was getting involved in online pharmaceuticals back in the early internet days, and that wasn't illegal, right? And that speaks to the problem that regulators had in catching up to the way people were doing business then, and that they should have been pouncing on that and stopping it when Paul LaRue was doing it. But Paul LaRue was able to do it for years without any real consequences whatsoever, and not least of which because he could say, this is a gray area, I'm allowed to do it. And regulators were kind of like, oh yeah, well, I mean, he's right. So I think that this has long suffered from a lot of that as well, especially when they started. Coinbase actually stayed away from a lot of these shitcoins for a very long time, while Binance
until they went
and these,
public.
Until they got listed publicly, that's right. Yes, has it changed their business model? I presume so. But also, I think that it just shows the complete knee-bending and weakness of regulators, and that's the other half of this issue that needs to be solved for, you know?
I hate seeing these assholes win as well. It's just personally, I feel like these people are just out-and-out criminals. And I think what people don't realize is this will have a knock-on effect on young people. Either they'll become radicalized into believing that actually crime is good and that cheating is good and this is how you get ahead, or they'll feel that the only way that people can do that is by cheating and just feel a great depression, great despondency. And I understand that, and I don't think people realize how poignant that is. I think people are, perhaps not the guys on this call, perhaps not people who listen, but I think an alarming amount of people in society don't realize how depressing being a young person has become. I'm 37, so I guess you can't really call me young, but even people my generation, people before that, generation after that as well. It's because of this sense that the classical ways to accumulate wealth are gone. You can't just work a job, you can't go to college, work a job, buy a house, 2.4 children and be happy. Most people can't actually buy a house, for example. You can't just put money in your 401k and like you'll be okay at retirement anymore. Most people are not able to accumulate wealth in any way that matches a normal path, that matches a default path.
I'm not even sure the American dream that you just, which I'm quite familiar, like I remember hearing about it all the time and hearing my parents talk about the American dream and it being precisely what you just described. But I don't think that that is necessarily the American dream anymore either, where I think it's like, I think the American dream for a lot of these people who are younger than me as well, a lot younger than me as well. From what I see, it's, I want to get hilariously rich. There's no other part to that. It's not like, so that I can do this and so that I can do that. And so I can build a family and own a home. It's like, I need to make a ton of money. I'll buy a bunch of cars. I'll buy a bunch of houses, but there's no like thought as to why you would want a bunch of cars or a bunch of houses or a bunch of whatever.
It's because I want to solve the existential risk of pandemics.
Right. Yeah.
I would like to push back on that a little bit. Not saying you're wrong, but I think there's a piece missing, which is I think before that, there is a sense that a lot of young people just feel like they're surviving. They're just like, I am just getting by. People who were in college when I was in college, that was like the end of any thought of a standard, like, I will buy a house and I will be happy.
Mm.
And I think as the standard system started to collapse around the financial crisis in 2008, and as basically the ability to get a mortgage became much, much, much harder because it became way too easy.
Sure.
People then stopped, like college started getting way more expensive and started being worth less. The calculations of college being worth it started to, I was actually listening to a New York Times podcast, but Michael Barbaro, awful guy, but about how all of the calculations about why college is good fail to count how much college counts. Costs even. So people are like, oh, just all of the math is wrong there. College maybe isn't worth it. And they're seeing the on-ramps to adulthood and they're saying, fuck, I can't just work. And then they're seeing hustle culture things like Gary Vaynerchuk and his evil, deeply cruel, evil, noxious creature, horrible, manipulative, narcissist freak, Gary Vaynerchuk. The reason that that has taken hold, and indeed things like Andrew Tate have taken hold, which is a cousin to that, is because, think about it, if I can't just do a job and get a house and have a nice life, of course I want to get hilariously rich. Of course I want to hustle. And because if I have to grind, I'm not grinding for mediocrity. I'm grinding for it all. Big cars, bunch of fucking stuff. It's a nihilistic thing. And you're right. No, people want it for no reason.
No, I agree. Yeah. See, this is where I do agree with you. But I think you need like, yeah, it's like, oh, you can't get the things the way that you can't just get a factory job, work for exactly 10 years, put your down payment on your house, have your wife and kid already, everybody's going to get a good education and all. You're right. You can't get that anymore. It's pretty disheartening. And then you're right that on the other end of that, though, is that after you're disheartened by not being able to do that, it's like, okay, well, you better start Amazon drop shipping and having 16 jobs and also list that you're an entrepreneur and thought leader in your Twitter profile or whatever. Like
everything is a personal brand.
And you got to have a podcast and a newsletter and
right.
YouTube channel. And
right.
Whoa. Okay. Didn't know we were getting into personal.
Shots fired.
No, but you're right, though. You're right, though. It is like you got to have a podcast, newsletter, you got to have a TikTok channel, you got to do all these things so that you can have a lifestyle that is comparable to your parents. So, of course, people want this. But also, all the hustle culture stuff is a convenient answer, and it isn't true. You can't do what Gary Vaynerchuk says. The dropshipping stuff, you can't do that. It might work for a bit, but it's an incredibly unsustainable business that can drop and pop at random. Go into crypto. Well, this guy made a bunch of money. Doesn't mean you will, but you can rationalize that.
Yeah.
It's all an outcrop of the same thing, which is people are desperate and the systems aren't working. And hustle culture really is kind of horrifying to me. I haven't written about it in a while, but it's horrifying because it's really glorified a deeply dark part of society, which is you can't just work anymore. There is no real honest living for a lot of people. You can't do that unless you just want to be renting for the rest of your life and probably staying in or around where you grew up. There is no economic mobility for a lot of people. College is too expensive now. It's just too expensive. And you basically need it for a lot of jobs. It's insane. So of course the hustle culture stuff, of course Andrew Tate works, even though most of what he says, all of what he says, frankly, is just nonsense. And that which almost makes sense is just crypt from others. And then he adds a little bit of sexism, like this mindset bullshit that all of these guys fucking have, this manipulative stuff. It all comes down to they are con artists that realize the system has failed. Crypto is an outgrowth of that. Decentralized money is, as a concept, not evil. But the way that it is executed has become evil. Decentralized software is theoretically a good idea, theoretically, but in execution, really not.
Well, it's just generally unnecessary for most things.
Yes, exactly. Like, there's no fucking point of it. I can see the idea of a social network that is decentralized. Sure. But then again, how the hell do you actually do that?
I'm on Blue Sky. I'm sure you.
Isn't it really.
It's supposed to be.
You can kind of federate the data storage, but the core relay functions and stuff are all still centralized on Blue Sky. Mastodon is a little bit more like federated in a real way, but that causes then issues in like data portability and data reproduction across instances. It's really fucking hard to make like an actually decentralized system that both works and is actually decentralized, which is why they either don't work or aren't decentralized.
We've consistently gotten some hate for this now, and this is not us endorsing Bitcoin or anything like that. I don't own any Bitcoin. I don't tell anyone to buy Bitcoin. I am not calling it an investment. Like, please don't take this the wrong way. But when we're talking about a decentralized network that operates the way that it was designed to, well, there you go. I mean, that's yeah, there we go, right? I'm now just the number one Bitcoin proponent. But I like what does it do? Well, it's a ledger. You know, it really isn't. That's all it fucking is. It's a database where you can put shit into and not have it get changed likely, right? And so that is what it does, and that's all it does. And it works in that sense. Okay? Fine. Like, as you're saying, you want to build a social network? Well, now you've just made it infinitely more complex, right? You want to do a decentralized game? I don't know why, but now it's way more difficult to do that.
No idea.
Right. Like,
these
things,
goddamn idea.
Don't you want to be able to port your Skyrim sword into GTA? Well, no, I don't. But okay, if that's something that you think we need to have, you just made games way more complex for really very little value gain at all. And so for most things, decentralization isn't just unnecessary, it actually is stupid. I think we're all in agreement there. All you have to do is look at the people you're attracting to the space to see, you know, it's not just the Winklevoss twins. It's not just Brian Armstrong. It's actual just like retail level crooks and pig butchering and the like shit like that is what's driving a lot of people into cryptocurrency in general. And hopefully a lot of cryptocurrency advocates would actually agree with that statement. I guess I don't know, but
they wouldn't. They would go the route of the apologist, and they would say, these are the vast majority of users. The vast majority of users of crypto. What I'm saying is they would lie. And they would say the vast majority of crypto users believe in the decentralized future. No. And actually, I would respect a lot more of these people if they were just like, yep, we created a kind of volatile asset class that directly benefits us. It's kind of fucking sweet. I love getting rich. If they said that, I would at least be like, you know what? Respect to the scam. Respect to being like, this shit rocks. I mean, Michael Saylor.
That guy's a scumbag, but at least he's not lying.
Michael Saylor, he's a piece of shit. Piece of fucking shit. Big, big runny turd. But he just gets on. He talks to Katie Greyfeld on Bloomberg every so often and goes, I bought a bazillion Bitcoin. I'm so rich. Woo. And I think he's a scumbag. And then the Just Society be begging for scraps. But at least he's not like, this is the future. This is the future. No, he's just like, money, money me, money now. Yum, yum, yum. Every day I get rich money.
He does try to say it's the future, though.
Yeah, but he just says it in the vaguest way. He's not fucking, I don't have to read a fucking, I don't get an email from from Michael Saylor, like I did with Coinbase, being like, please help me abuse this congressman who has suggested that that we need to change crypto. Please, please write your congressman right now to say that crypto is actually good. No, Michael Saylor just goes on Bloomberg and says Bitcoin future, Bitcoin money, yum, 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 and then disappears up his own a-hole every day. And that's, it's not fine. He should not. That's the thing, though. I think that, that's what it really comes down to. You're seeing the biggest pieces of shit win. You're seeing nasty bitches win much money in the most crooked way. And it's just, this is what sucks. Like, you shouldn't be able to just invent a new currency like this.
Well, you should, but who the fuck, why would anyone buy it, right? Like, under any real auspices.
Okay, you should be able to invent it, but it should have to do something to... Versus
sure. You, I mean, there's whatever. There's like Disney World bucks when you go to Disney World, right? Like fine, I guess, but like it's also stupid. I like everyone should acknowledge how stupid it is as well, unfortunately. And as you're saying, a lot of people aren't even willing to go that far. But I also think it is exactly what you're talking about, and this is my thing that I've talked to Bennett about with like. When we were talking about FTX and SBF, it's like, well, yeah, should he go to jail for a really long time? 100% yes. Also, is it looking like CZ is going to get off with probably no jail time whatsoever? Yeah, that's crazy because CZ has definitely broken probably more rules and regulations and fucked with more of his customers' money over a time period than SBF did, but like there will be no repercussions for that. And I like, that's crazy to me. That is crazy to me. And it is crazy to me that you said, it's so funny. You said yum, yum, yum money. And I almost thought you were talking about someone else who's one of my favorite people in cryptocurrency.
Oh yeah.
Gregory Pepin, who is a gentleman who works for Deltek Bank and Trust in the Bahamas.
Oh, yeah. It was like,
and
money
he
time.
Literally, yay! Yeah, yum, money time, like literally wrote that
honestly,
down.
Honestly, if I was being sent hundreds of millions of dollars, I would be doing the same thing.
I guess. Would you write it
but
down
I would
though,
also
Ed?
I would never text about it.
Exactly. Like this is, and you work in a bank, and this goes back to the very beginning of our conversation today, where it's like, these are the most sophisticated people with money. And you know what? Yeah, exactly. They're not. They're not the most sophisticated people. And it turns out that they're just like you and me, and if not stupider, because you and me aren't going to write down yummy, yummy money time.
Crime. I'll send that to wire fraud chat.
Yeah, crazy, crazy. I think we largely agreed on all of this stuff today. Before we let you go, Ed, I think you should talk about your new podcast, Better Offline.
Right. So toward the end of last year, I was approached by Cool Zone Media, who do Behind the Bastards, It Could Happen Here, another Hood Politics, and a bunch of other great podcasts. And they're part of iHeartRadio. And they were like, we have read your newsletter. We like your newsletter. And we've been looking to do a weekly tech show. And it was something like someone who is critical, but doesn't just hate it with their entire soul. Robert was a little more eloquent than that. And so that's kind of what it's turned into. It's just the same thing I do with my newsletter, which is, I am in business in tech and I am also a writer. And so I put on a show every week where I go through stuff. This week, as in by the time this runs, it will probably be out. I talked with David Fahrenthold from the Times about the Elon Musk charity story. I did the Winklevoss brothers week before that was the metaverse. Week before that was the Winklevoss things. And the big thing is it comes down to something that I think you've done very well with this podcast, which is people are not stupid. A lot of tech stuff is written in such a way that it's meant to be obfuscated. To your point you made earlier, where's the yield come from? These are actually very simple things that people can understand. When these companies add up layers of obfuscation, they're hoping that you never go that deep. Something like the metaverse, most people are like, what the hell was that? And the answer was nothing. It was nothing. It wasn't anything. Everyone lied. And just look at them. People do this in plain sight. A lot of AI stuff is just buzzwords. It's just sexy autocomplete. We all know it. We're all seeing it. And I think that something with Better Offline I'm doing is trying to just break down stuff in a way that isn't condescending, that explains stuff that I don't believe is well explained, but also just gives people it straight from my opinion. I'm not pretending it's like I'm an academic or anything, but I generally have good sources. I generally do my research. And oh, it's been a lot of fun. People seem to like it. Certain Reddits don't like me, but I mean, that happens.
Yeah, same.
Occupational hazard.
Yeah, occupational hazard, I'm afraid. But no, it's, and I think it's something, like I said, that you guys have done well, where it's just a lot of these things can be talked out in plain English in a way they're not.
Yeah.
And I think that the fact that that's the case is exactly why there's need for more of this kind of thing. The fact that so many people obfuscate this stuff, and it isn't just rewriting press releases, it's what does this actually mean in English straight up, and what are the ramifications of that? I know it sounds stupid and obvious thing for a podcast, but Jesus Christ, there's not many that do it. Mostly just two boring white guys. No offense, guys. I'm not referring to you.
Shots fired. Shots like, fired.
Or in the case of Lex Fridman, one boring white guy.
With a guest and, who's usually a boring white guy as well.
Yeah. And just grumbling and mumbling through tech. And it's either completely bland or there's just the thing where it's like, yeah, so I was using ChatGPT the other day and I asked it to tell me what George Washington would look like if he was Chinese. And I got very angry at my computer when he showed me. And it's just the same anti-wokeness nonsense because a lot of the rich guys in tech are just very boring pieces of shit. Anyway, listen to the show.
On that note, also check out Ed's Where's Your Ed At newsletter. Last one, before we put this episode out, he wrote, are we watching the internet die? Went over the Reddit IPO and some other stuff. But yeah, I urge for all of it. Yeah. Okay. So there you go. I think that's going to do it for this episode. If you guys want to donate your Cast Coin to the Cast Coin Foundation, feel free to visit. Make sure that you visit castcoinfoundation.org. We're trying to raise money for me.